talking, especially with Portia Featherington as a witness. I don't trust that woman to keep her mouth shut any longer than it takes her to return to the house. He leaned back and propped his left ankle on his right knee. So, we might as well make the best of it. I have to get married this year.
Why?
Why what?
Why do you have to get married this year?
He paused for a moment. There wasn't really an answer to that question. So he said, Because I decided I would, and that's a good enough reason for me. As for you, you have to get married eventually. She interrupted him again with,
To be honest, I rather assumed I wouldn't.
Anthony felt his muscles tense, and it took him several seconds to realize that what he was feeling was rage. You planned to live your life as a spinster? She nodded, her eyes innocent and frank at the same time.
It seemed a definite possibility, yes.
Anthony held himself still for several seconds, thinking he might like to murder all those men and women who had compared her to Edwina and found her lacking. Kate truly had no idea that she might be attractive and desirable in her own right. When Mrs. Featherington had announced that they must marry, his initial reaction had been the same as Kate's, utter horror, not to mention a rather pricked sense of pride. No man liked to be forced into marriage, and it was particularly galling to be forced by a bee. But as he stood there, watching Kate howl in protest, not, he thought, the most flattering of reactions, but he supposed she was allowed her pride as well, a strange sense of satisfaction washed over him. He wanted her. He wanted her desperately. He wouldn't, in a million years, have allowed himself to choose her as a wife. She was far, far too dangerous to his peace of mind. But fate had intervened, and now that it looked like he had to marry her, well, there didn't seem much use in putting up a big fuss. There were worse fates than finding oneself married to an intelligent, entertaining woman whom one happened to lust after around the clock. All he had to do was make certain he didn't actually fall in love with her. Which shouldn't prove impossible, right? The Lord knew she drove him crazy half the time with her incessant arguing. He could have a pleasant marriage with Kate. He'd enjoy her friendship and enjoy her body and keep it at that. It didn't have to go any deeper. And he couldn't have asked for a better woman to serve as mother to his sons after he was gone. That was certainly worth a great deal. This will work, he said with great authority. You'll see. She looked doubtful, but she nodded. Of course, there was little else she could do. She'd just been caught by the biggest gossip in London with a man's mouth on her chest. If he hadn't offered to marry her, she'd have been ruined forever. And if she'd refused to marry him, well, then she'd be branded a fallen woman and an idiot. Anthony suddenly stood. Mother, he barked, leaving Kate on the bench as he strode over to her. My fiancée and I desire a bit of privacy here in the garden.
Of course, Lady Bridgerton murmured. Do you think that's wise? Mrs. Featherington asked.
Anthony leaned forward, placed his mouth very close to his mother's ear, and whispered, If you do not remove her from my presence within the next 10 seconds, I shall murder her on the spot. Lady Bridgerton choked on a laugh, nodded, and managed to say, Of course. In under a minute, Anthony and Kate were alone in the garden. He turned to face her. She'd stood and taken a few steps toward him. I think, he murmured, slipping his arm through hers, that we ought to consider moving out of sight of the house. His steps were long and purposeful, and she stumbled to keep up with him until she found her stride.
My lord, she asked, hurrying along, do you think this is wise?
You sound like Mrs. Featherington, he pointed out, not breaking his pace even for a second.
Heaven forbid, Kate muttered, but the question still stands.
Yes, I do think it's very wise, he replied, pulling her into a gazebo.
Its walls were partially open to the air, but it was surrounded by lilac bushes and afforded them considerable privacy.
But,
he smiled, slowly,
Did you know you argue too much?
You brought me here to tell me that.
No, he drawled. I brought you here to do this. And then, before she had a chance to utter a word, before she even had a chance to draw breath, his mouth swooped down and captured hers in a hungry, searing kiss. His lips were voracious, taking everything she had to give, and then demanding even more. The fire that glowed within her burned and crackled, even hotter than what he'd stoked that night in his study, hotter by a tenfold. She was melting. Dear God, she was melting, and she wanted so much more. You shouldn't do this to me, he whispered against her mouth. You shouldn't. Everything about you is absolutely wrong. And yet... Kate gasped as his hand stole around to her backside and pressed her harshly against his arousal. Do you see? He said raggedly, his lips moving along her cheek. Do you feel? He chuckled hoarsely, an odd, mocking sound. Do you even understand? He squeezed mercilessly, then nibbled the tender skin of her ear. Of course you don't. Kate felt herself sliding into him. Her skin was starting to burn, and her traitorous arms stole up and around his neck. He was stoking a fire in her, something she could not even begin to control. She'd been possessed by some primitive urge, something hot and molten, which needed nothing so much as the touch of his skin against hers. She wanted him. Oh, how she wanted him! She shouldn't want him. Shouldn't desire this man who was marrying her for all the wrong reasons. And yet she wanted him with a desperation that left her breathless. It was wrong, so very wrong. She had grave doubts about this marriage, and she knew she ought to maintain a clear head. She kept trying to remind herself of that, but it didn't stop her lips from parting to allow his entry, nor her own tongue from shyly flicking out to taste the corner of his mouth. And the desire pooling in her belly. And surely that was what this strange, prickly, swirling feeling had to be. It just kept getting stronger and stronger. Am I a terrible person? She whispered, more for her ears than for his. Does this mean I am fallen? But he heard her, and his voice was hot and moist on the skin of her cheek. No. He moved to her ear and made her listen more closely. No. He travelled to her lips and forced her to swallow the word. No. Kate felt her head fall back. His voice was low and seductive, and it almost made her feel like she'd been born for this moment. You're perfect, he whispered, his large hands moving urgently over her body, one settling on her waist and the other moving up toward the gentle swell of her breast. Right here, right now, in this moment. In this garden, you're perfect. Kate found something unsettling about his words, as if he were trying to tell her, and perhaps himself as well, that she might not be perfect tomorrow, and perhaps even less so the next day. But his lips and hands were persuasive, and she forced the unpleasant thoughts from her head, instead reveling in the heady bliss of the moment. She felt beautiful. She felt perfect. And right there, right then, she couldn't help but adore the man who made her feel that way. Antony slid the hand at her waist to the small of her back, supporting her as his other hand found her breast and squeezed her flesh through the thin muslin of her dress. His fingers seemed beyond his control, tight and spasmodic, gripping her as if he were falling off a cliff and had finally found purchase. Her nipple was hard and tight against his palm, even through the fabric of her dress, and it took everything in him, every last ounce of restraint, not to reach around to the back of her frock and slowly pull each button from its prison. He could see it all in his mind, even as his lips met hers in another searing kiss. Her dress would slip from her shoulders, the muslin doing a tantalizing slide along her skin until her breasts were bared. He could picture those in his mind too, and he somehow knew they too would be perfect. He'd cup one, lifting the nipple to the sun, and slowly, ever so slowly, He'd bend his head toward her, until he could just barely touch her with his tongue. She'd moan, and he'd tease her some more, holding her tightly so that she couldn't wriggle away. And then, just when her head dropped back and she was gasping, he'd replace his tongue with his lips and suckle her until she screamed. Dear God, he wanted that so badly he thought he might explode. But this wasn't the time or the place. It wasn't that he felt a need to wait for his marriage vows. As far as he was concerned, he'd declared himself in public, and she was his. But he wasn't going to tumble her in his mother's garden gazebo. He had more pride and more respect for her than that. With great reluctance, he slowly tore himself away from her, letting his hands rest on her slim shoulders and straightening his arms to keep himself far enough away so that he wouldn't be tempted to continue where he'd left off. And the temptation was there. He made the mistake of looking at her face, and in that moment he would have sworn that Kate Sheffield was every bit as beautiful as her sister. Hers was a different sort of attraction. Her lips were fuller, less in fashion, but infinitely more kissable. Her lashes, how had he not noticed before how long they were? When she blinked, they seemed to rest on her cheeks like a carpet. And when her skin was tinged with the pinks of desire, she glowed. Antony knew he was being fanciful, but when he gazed upon her face, he could not help thinking of the new dawn, of that exact moment when the sun was creeping over the horizon, painting the sky with its subtle palette of peaches and pinks. They stood that way for a full minute, both catching their breath, until Antony finally let his arms drop, and they each took a step back. Kate lifted a hand to her mouth, her four middle and ring fingers just barely touching her lips.
"We shouldn't have done that," she whispered.
He leaned back against one of the gazebo posts, looked extremely satisfied with his lot.
"Why not? We're betrothed."
"We're not," she admitted. "Not really."
He quirked a brow.
"No agreements have been made," Kate explained hastily, "or papers signed. And I have no dowry. You should know that I have no dowry."
This caused him to smile.
"Are you trying to get rid of me?"
"Of course not."
She fidgeted slightly, shifting her weight from foot to foot. He took a step toward her.
"Surely you're not trying to provide me with a reason to be rid of you?"
Kate flushed.
No,
she lied, even though that was exactly what she had been doing. It was, of course, the utmost stupidity on her part. If he backed out of this marriage, she'd be ruined forever, not just in London, but also in her little village in Somerset. News of a fallen woman always travelled fast. But it was never easy to be the second choice, and a part of her almost wanted him to confirm all of her suspicions, that he didn't want her as his bride, that he'd much prefer Edwina, that he was only marrying her because he had to. It would hurt dreadfully, but if he would just say it, she would know. And knowing, even if the knowledge was bitter, was always better than not knowing. At least then she would know exactly where she stood. As it was, she felt as if her feet were planted firmly in quicksand.
"Let us make one thing clear," Antony said,
capturing her attention with his decisive tone. His eyes caught hers, burning with such intensity that she could not look away.
"I said I was going to marry you. I am a man of my word. Any further speculation on the subject would be highly insulting."
Kate nodded, but she couldn't help thinking, "Be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you wish for." She'd just agreed to marry the very man with whom she feared she was falling in love, and all she could wonder was, "Does he think of Edwina when he kisses me?" "Be careful what you wish for," her mind thundered. "You just might get it."
Chapter 15. Once again, this author has been proven correct. Country house parties do result in the most surprising of betrothals.
Yes, indeed, dear reader. You are surely reading it here first. Viscount Bridgerton is to marry Miss Catherine Sheffield, not Miss Edwina, as gossips had speculated, but Miss Catherine. As to how the betrothal came about, details have been surprisingly difficult to obtain. This author has it on the best authority that the new couple was caught in a compromising position, and that Mrs. Featherington was a witness. But Mrs. F. has been uncharacteristically close-lipped about the entire affair. Given that lady's propensity for gossip, this author can only assume that the Viscount, never known for lacking a spine, threatened bodily injury upon Mrs. F., should she even breathe a syllable. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 11th of May, 1814. Kate soon realised that notoriety did not agree with her. The remaining 2 days in Kent had been bad enough. Once Antony had announced their engagement at supper, following their somewhat precipitous betrothal, she had scarcely a chance to breathe between all the congratulations, questions, and innuendos that were being tossed her way by Lady Bridgerton's guests. The only time she felt truly at ease was when, a few hours after Antony's announcement, she finally had a chance to talk privately with Edwina, who'd thrown her arms around her sister and declared herself thrilled, overjoyed, and not even one tiny bit surprised. Kate had expressed her surprise that Edwina was not surprised, but Edwina had just shrugged and said, "It was obvious to me that he was smitten. I do not know why no one else saw it," which had left Kate rather puzzled, since she'd been fairly certain that Antony had had his matrimonial sights set on Edwina. Once Kate returned to London, the speculation was even worse. Every single member of the ton, it seemed, found it imperative to stop by the Sheffields' small rented home on Milner Street to call on the future Viscountess. Most managed to infuse their congratulations with a healthy dose of unflattering implication. No one believed it possible that the Viscount might actually want to marry Kate, and no one seemed to realise how rude it was to say as much to her face. "My goodness, you were lucky," said Lady Cooper, the mother of the infamous Cressida Cooper, who, for her part, did not say two words to Kate, just sulked in the corner and glared daggers in her direction.
"I had no idea he was interested in you," gushed Miss Gertrude Knight, with a facial expression that clearly said she still didn't believe it, and perhaps even hoped that the betrothal might still prove to be a sham, announcement in the London Times notwithstanding. And from Lady Danbury, who'd never been known to mince words, "Don't know how you trapped him, but it must have been a neat trick. There are a few girls out there who wouldn't mind taking lessons from you, mark my words." Kate just smiled, or tried to, at least. She suspected that her attempts at gracious and friendly response were not always convincing, and nodded and murmured, "I am a fortunate girl," whenever Mary poked her in the side. As for Antony, the lucky man had been able to avoid the harsh scrutiny she'd been forced to endure. He had told her he needed to remain at Aubrey Hall to take care of a few estate details before the wedding, which had been set for the following Saturday, only 9 days after the incident in the garden. Mary had worried that such hastiness would lead to talk, but Lady Bridgerton had rather pragmatically explained that there would be talk no matter what, and that Kate would be less subject to unflattering innuendo once she had the protection of Antony's name. Kate suspected that the Viscountess, who had gained a certain reputation for her single-minded desire to see her adult children married off, simply wanted to get Antony in front of the bishop before he had the chance to change his mind. Kate found herself in agreement with Lady Bridgerton. As nervous as she was about the wedding and the marriage to follow, she'd never been the sort to put things off. Once she made a decision, or, in this case, had one made for her, she saw no reason for delay. And as for the talk, a hasty wedding might increase its volume, but Kate suspected that the sooner she and Antony were married, the sooner it would die down,
and the sooner she might hope to return to the normal obscurity of her own life. Of course, her life would not be her own for much longer. She was going to have to get used to that. Not that it felt like her own even now. Her days were a whirlwind of activity, with Lady Bridgerton dragging her from shop to shop, spending an enormous amount of Antony's money for her trousseau. Kate had quickly learned that resistance was useless. When Lady Bridgerton, or Violet, as she had now been instructed to call her, made up her mind, heaven help the fool who got in her way. Mary and Edwina had accompanied them on a few of the outings, but they had quickly declared themselves exhausted by Violet's indefatigable energy and gone off to Gunter's for a flavoured ice. Finally, a mere 2 days before the wedding, Kate received a note from Antony, asking her to be at home at 4 that afternoon so that he might pay her a call. Kate was a little nervous at seeing him again. Somehow everything seemed different, more formal in town. Nonetheless, she seized upon the opportunity to avoid another afternoon on Oxford Street, at the dressmaker, and the milliner, and the glovemaker, and to whomever else Violet had it in mind to drag her. And so, while Mary and Edwina were out running errands, Kate had conveniently forgotten to mention that the Viscount was expected. She sat down in the drawing-room, Newton sleeping contentedly at her feet, and waited. Antony had spent most of the week thinking. Not surprisingly, all of his thoughts were of Kate and their upcoming union. He'd been worried that he could, if he let himself, love her. The key, it seemed, was simply not to let himself. And the more he thought about it, the more convinced he was that this would not pose a problem. He was a man, after all, and well in control of his actions and emotions. He was no fool. He knew that love existed. But he also believed in the power of the mind, and perhaps even more importantly, the power of the will. Frankly, he saw no reason why love should be an involuntary thing. If he didn't want to fall in love, then by damn, he wasn't going to. It was as simple as that. It had to be as simple as that. If it weren't, then he wasn't much of a man, was he? He would, however, have to have a talk with Kate on this measure prior to the wedding. There were certain things about their marriage that needed to be made clear. Not rules exactly, but understandings. Yes, that was a good word for it. Kate needed to understand exactly what she could expect from him, and what he expected in return. Theirs was not a love match, and it wasn't going to grow into one. That simply was not an option. He didn't think she had any delusions on that measure, but just in case, he wanted to make it clear now, before any misunderstandings had the chance to grow into full-fledged disasters. It was best to lay everything out on the proverbial table, so that neither party would be unpleasantly surprised later on. Surely Kate would agree. She was a practical girl. She'd want to know where she stood. She wasn't the sort who liked to be kept guessing. At precisely 2 minutes before 4, Antony rapped twice on the Sheffield's front door, trying to ignore the half-dozen members of the Ton who just happened to be strolling along Milner Street that afternoon. They were, he thought with a grimace, a bit far from their usual haunts. But he wasn't surprised. He might be recently returned to London, but he was well aware that his betrothal was the current scandal du jour. Whistledown was delivered all the way in Kent, after all. The butler opened the door quickly and ushered him in, showing him to the nearby drawing-room. Kate was waiting on the sofa, her hair swept up into a neat something or other. Antony never could remember the names of all those coiffures the ladies seemed to favour, and topped with a ridiculous little cap of some sort that he supposed was meant to match the white trim on her pale blue afternoon dress. The cap, he decided, would be the first thing to go once they were married. She had lovely hair, long and lustrous and thick. He knew that good manners dictated that she wear bonnets when she was out and about, but really, it seemed a crime to cover it up in the comfort of her own home. Before he could open his mouth, however, even in greeting, she motioned to a silver tea service on the table in front of her and said,
"I took the liberty of ordering tea. There's a slight chill in the air, and I thought you might like some. If you don't, I'd be happy to ring for something else."
There hadn't been a chill in the air, at least not one that Antony had detected, but he nonetheless said, "That would be lovely, thank you." Kate nodded and picked up the pot to pour. She tipped it about an inch, then righted it, frowning as she said,
"I don't even know how you take your tea."
Antony felt one corner of his mouth tipping up slightly. "Milk, no sugar." She nodded, setting the pot down in favour of the milk.
"It seems a thing a wife should know."
He sat down in a chair that sat at a right angle to the sofa. "And now you do." She took a deep breath and then let it go.
"Now I do," she murmured.
Antony cleared his throat as he watched her pour. She wasn't wearing gloves, and he found he liked to watch her hands as she worked. Her fingers were long and slender, and they were incredibly graceful, which surprised him, considering how many times she'd trod on his toes while dancing. Of course, some of those missteps had been done on purpose, but not, he suspected, as many as she would have liked to have him believe.
"Here you are," she murmured, holding out his tea. "Be careful, it's hot. I've never been one for lukewarm tea."
No, he thought with a smile, she wouldn't be. Kate wasn't the sort to do anything in half measures. It was one of the things he liked best about her.
"My lord," she said politely, moving the tea a few inches farther in his direction.
Antony grasped the saucer, allowing his gloved fingers to brush against her bare ones. He kept his eyes on her face, noticing the faint pink stain of blush that touched her cheeks. For some reason, that pleased him.
"Did you have something specific you wanted to ask me, my lord?"
she asked, once her hand was safely away from his and her fingers wrapped around the handle of her own teacup. "It's Antony, as I'm sure you recall, and I can't call upon my fiancée merely for the pleasure of her company." She gave him a shrewd look over the rim of her cup.
"Of course you can," she replied, "but I don't think you are."
He raised a brow at her impertinence. "As it happens, you're right." She murmured something. He didn't quite catch it, but he had a sneaking suspicion it had been, "I usually am." "I thought we ought to discuss our marriage," he said.
"I beg your pardon?"
He leaned back in his chair. "We're both practical people. I think we'll find ourselves more at ease once we understand what we can expect from one another."
Of course.
"Good." He set his teacup down in the saucer, then set both down on the table in front of him. "I'm glad you feel that way." Kate nodded slowly, but didn't say anything, instead choosing to keep her eyes trained on his face as he cleared his throat. He looked as if he were preparing for a parliamentary speech. "We did not get off to the most favourable of starts," he said, scowling slightly when she nodded her agreement. "But I feel, and I hope that you do as well, that we have since reached a friendship of sorts." She nodded again, thinking that she might make it all the way through the conversation, doing nothing but nodding. "Friendship between the husband and the wife is of the utmost importance," he continued. "Even more important, in my opinion, than love." This time she didn't nod. "Our marriage will be one based on mutual friendship and respect," he pontificated, "and I for one could not be more pleased."
"Respect," Kate echoed,
mostly because he was looking at her expectantly. "I will do my best to be a good husband to you," he said, "and provided that you do not bar me from your bed, I shall be faithful to both you and our vows."
"That's rather enlightened of you," she murmured. He was saying nothing she did not expect, and yet she found it somewhat needling all the same.
His eyes narrowed. "I hope you're taking me seriously, Kate."
"Oh, very much so."
"Good." But he gave her a funny look, and she wasn't sure if he believed her. "In return," he added,
I expect that you will not behave in any manner that will sully my family's name."
Kate felt her spine stiffen.
"I would not dream of it."
"I didn't think you would. That is one of the reasons I am so pleased with this marriage. You will make an excellent Viscountess."
It was meant as a compliment, Kate knew, but still it felt a bit hollow, and maybe a touch condescending. She'd much rather have been told that she'd make an excellent wife.
"We shall have friendship," he announced, "and we shall have mutual respect. And children. Intelligent children, thank God, since you are quite the most intelligent woman of my acquaintance."
That made up for his condescension, but Kate had barely time to smile at his compliment before he added,
"But you should not expect love. This marriage will not be about love."
An awful lump rose in Kate's throat, and she found herself nodding yet again, except this time every movement of her neck somehow brought pain to her heart.
"There are certain things I cannot give you," Anthony said, "and love, I'm afraid, is one of them."
"I see."
"Do you?"
"Of course," she practically snapped. "You could not make it any plainer if you wrote it on my arm."
"I had never planned to marry for love," he said.
"That is not what you told me when you were courting Edwina."
"When I was courting Edwina," he returned, "I was trying to impress you."
Her eyes narrowed.
"You are not impressing me now."
He let out a long breath.
"Kate, I did not come here to argue. I merely thought it best if we were honest with one another before the wedding on Saturday morning."
"Of course,"
she sighed, forcing herself to nod. His intention hadn't been to insult her, and she shouldn't have overreacted. She knew him well enough now to know that he was merely acting out of concern. He knew he would never love her. Better to make that clear in the beginning. But still it hurt. She didn't know if she loved him, but she was fairly certain she could love him, and deathly afraid that after a few weeks of marriage, she would love him. And it would be so nice if he could just love her back.
"It is best that we understand each other now," he said softly.
Kate just kept nodding. A body in motion tended to remain in motion, and she was afraid that if she stopped, she might do something really stupid, like cry. He reached across the table and took her hand, which made her flinch.
"I didn't want you to enter this marriage with any delusions," he said. "I didn't think you'd want that."
"Of course not, my lord," she said.
He frowned.
"I thought I told you to call me Anthony."
"You did," she said. "My lord."
He withdrew his hand. Kate watched as he returned it to his own lap, feeling strangely bereft.
"Before I go," he said, "I have something for you."
Without taking his eyes off of her face, he reached into his pocket and pulled out a small jeweller's box.
"I must apologise for being so delayed in presenting you with a betrothal ring," he murmured,
handing it to her. Kate smoothed her fingers over the blue velvet covering before flipping the box open. Inside lay a rather simple gold ring, adorned by a single round-cut diamond.
"It's a Bridgerton heirloom," he said. "There are several betrothal rings in the collection, but I thought you'd like this one best. The others were rather heavy and fussy."
"It's beautiful," Kate said, quite unable to take her eyes off of it.
He reached out and took the box from her.
"May I?"
he murmured, plucking the ring from its velvet nest. She held out her hand, cursing at herself, when she realised she was trembling. Not a great deal, but surely enough for him to notice. He didn't say a word, though, just steadied her hand with his, as he used the other to slip the ring on her finger.
"Looks rather nice, don't you think?"
he asked, still holding the tips of her fingers with his. Kate nodded, unable to take her eyes off of it. She'd never been one for rings. This would be the first she wore with any regularity. It felt strange on her finger, heavy and cold, and very, very solid.
It somehow made everything that had happened in the past week seem more real, more final.
It occurred to her as she was staring at the ring that she'd been half expecting a bolt of lightning to come down from heaven and stop the proceedings before they actually said their vows. Anthony moved closer,
then brought her newly adorned fingers to his lips.
"Perhaps we should seal the bargain with a kiss," he murmured.
"I'm not sure." He pulled her onto his lap and grinned devilishly.
"I am."
But as Kate tumbled onto him, she accidentally kicked Newton, who let out a loud, whiny bark, obviously distressed at having his nap so rudely interrupted. Anthony raised a brow and peered over Kate at Newton.
"I didn't even see him here."
"He was taking a nap," Kate explained. "He's a very sound sleeper." But once awake, Newton refused to be left out of the action, and with a slightly more awake bark, he leaped up onto the chair, landing on Kate's lap.
"Newton!"
she squealed.
"Oh, for the love of—"
But Anthony's mutterings were cut short by a big, sloppy kiss from Newton.
"I think he likes you,"
Kate said, so amused by Anthony's disgusted expression that she forgot to be self-conscious about her position on his lap.
"Dog!" Anthony ordered. "Get down on the floor this instant!"
Newton hung his head and whined.
"Now!"
Letting out a big sigh, Newton turned about and plopped down onto the floor.
"My goodness,"
Kate said, peering down at the dog, who was now moping under the table, his snout lying sorrowfully on the carpet.
"I'm impressed."
"It's all in the tone of voice,"
Anthony said archly, snaking a vice-like arm around her waist so that she could not get up. Kate looked at his arm, then looked at his face, her brows arching in question.
"Why," she mused, "do I get the impression you find that tone of voice effective on women as well?"
He shrugged and leaned toward her with a heavy-lidded smile.
"It usually is," he murmured.
"Not this one."
Kate planted her hands on the arms of the chair and tried to wrench herself up, but he was far too strong.
"Especially this one,"
he said, his voice dropping to an impossibly low purr. With his free hand, he cupped her chin and turned her face to his. His lips were soft but demanding, and he explored her mouth with a thoroughness that left her breathless. His mouth moved along the line of her jaw to her neck, pausing only to whisper,
"Where is your mother?"
"Out!"
Kate gasped. His teeth tugged at the edge of her bodice.
"For how long?"
"I don't know!"
She let out a little squeal as his tongue dipped below the muslin and traced an erotic line on her skin.
"Good heavens, Anthony, what are you doing?"
"How long?"
he repeated.
"An hour, maybe two."
Anthony glanced up to make sure he'd shut the door when he had entered earlier.
"Maybe two,"
he murmured, smiling against her skin.
"Really?"
Maybe just one."
He hooked a finger under the edge of her bodice, up near her shoulder, making sure to catch the edge of her chemise as well.
"One," he said, "is still quite splendid."
Then, pausing only to bring his mouth to hers so that she could not utter any protest, he swiftly pulled her dress down, taking the chemise along with it. He felt her gasp into his mouth, but he just deepened the kiss as he palmed the round fullness of her breast. She was perfect under his fingers, soft and pert, filling his hand as if she'd been made for him. When he felt the last of her resistance melt away, he moved his kiss to her ear, nibbling softly on her lobe.
"Do you like this?"
he whispered, squeezing gently with his hand. She nodded jerkily.
Good,
he murmured, letting his tongue do a slow sweep of her ear.
"It would make things very difficult if you did not."
"How?"
He fought the bubble of mirth that was rising in his throat. This absolutely wasn't the time to laugh, but she was so damned innocent. He'd never made love to a woman like her before. He was finding it surprisingly delightful.
"Let's just say," he said, "that I like it very much."
"Oh."
She offered him the most tentative of smiles.
"There's more, you know,"
he whispered, letting his breath caress her ear.
"I'm sure there must be,"
she replied, her voice mere breath.
"You are?"
he asked teasingly, squeezing her again.
"I'm not so green that I think one can make a baby from what we've been doing."
"I'd be happy to show you the rest,"
he murmured.
Not... Oh!
He'd squeezed again, this time allowing his fingers to tickle her skin. He loved that she couldn't think when he touched her breasts.
You were saying?
He prompted, nibbling on her neck.
I was.
He nodded, the faint stubble of his beard brushing her throat.
I'm sure you were. But then again, perhaps I'd rather not hear. You'd begun with the word not. Surely,
he added with a flick of his tongue against the underside of her chin,
not a word that belongs between us at a time like this. But...
His tongue moved down the line of her throat to the hollow above her collarbone.
I digress.
You do?
He nodded.
I believe I was trying to determine what pleases you, as all good husbands should do.
She said nothing, but her breathing quickened. He smiled against her skin.
What, for example, about this?
He flattened his hand, so that he was no longer cupping her, instead just letting his palm graze lightly over her nipple.
Anthony,
she choked out.
Good,
he said, moving to her neck, nudging her chin up so that she was more open to him.
I'm glad we're back to Anthony. My lord is so formal, don't you think? Far too formal for this.
And then he did what he'd been fantasizing about for weeks. He lowered his head to her breast and took her into his mouth, tasting, suckling, teasing, reveling in each gasp he heard spill forth from her lips, each spasm of desire he felt shivering across her body. He loved that she reacted this way, thrilled that he did this to her.
So good,
he murmured, his breath hot and moist against her skin.
You taste so damn good.
Anthony,
she said, her voice hoarse.
Are you sure?
He put a finger to her lips, without even lifting his face to look at her.
I have no idea what you're asking. But whatever it is,
he moved his attention to her other breast.
I'm sure.
She made a soft little moaning sound, the sort that came from the very bottom of one's throat. Her body arched under his ministrations, and with renewed fervour he teased her nipple, grazing it gently between his teeth.
Oh, my! Oh, Anthony!
He ran his tongue around the aureole. She was perfect, simply perfect. He loved the sound of her voice, hoarse and broken with desire, and his body tingled at the thought of their wedding night, of her cries of passion and need. She'd be an inferno beneath him, and he relished the prospect of making her explode. He pulled away so that he could see her face. She was flushed, and her eyes were dazed and dilated. Her hair was starting to come undone from that hideous cap. This, he said, plucking it from her head, has got to go.
My lord!
Promise me you'll never wear it again.
She twisted in her seat, on his lap, actually, which did little to help the rather urgent state of his groin, to look over the edge of the chair.
I'll do no such thing,
she retorted.
I quite like that cap.
You can't possibly,
he said in all seriousness.
I can, and... Newton!
Anthony followed her line of vision and broke out into loud laughter, shaking the both of them in their seats. Newton was happily munching away on Kate's cap.
Good dog! He said on a laugh.
I would make you buy me another,
Kate muttered, yanking her dress back up.
Except that you've already spent a fortune on me this week.
This amused him.
I have,
he inquired mildly. She nodded.
I've been shopping with your mother.
Ah, good. I'm sure she didn't let you pick out anything like that.
He motioned toward the now mangled cap in Newton's mouth. When he looked back at her, her mouth was twisted into a fetchingly disgruntled line. He couldn't help but smile. She was so easy to read. His mother hadn't let her buy such an unattractive cap, and it was killing her that she couldn't offer a retort to his last statement. He sighed rather contentedly. Life with Kate wasn't going to be dull. But it was getting late, and he should probably be going. Kate had said her mother wasn't expected for at least an hour. But Anthony knew better than to trust the female sense of time. Kate could be wrong, or her mother could have changed her mind, or any number of things might have happened, and even though he and Kate were due to be married in just 2 days, it didn't seem particularly prudent to get caught in the drawing room in such a compromising position. With great reluctance, sitting in the chair with Kate and doing nothing but hold her was surprisingly satisfying. He stood, lifting her in his arms as he did so, and then set her back in the chair. "This has been a delightful interlude," he murmured, leaning down to drop a kiss on her forehead. "But I fear your mother's early return. I shall see you Saturday morning." She blinked.
"Saturday?"
"A superstition of my mother's," he said with a sheepish smile. "She thinks it's bad luck for the bride and groom to see one another the day before the wedding."
"Oh."
She rose to her feet, self-consciously smoothing her dress and hair.
"And do you believe it as well?"
"Not at all," he said with a snort.
She nodded. "It's very sweet of you to indulge your mother, then."
Anthony paused for a moment, well aware that most men of his reputation did not want to appear tied to apron strings. But this was Kate, and he knew that she valued devotion to family as much as he did. So he finally said, "There is little I would not do to keep my mother content." She smiled shyly.
"It is one of the things I like best about you."
He made some sort of gesture designed to change the subject, but she interrupted with,
"No, it's true. You're far more caring a person than you'd like people to believe."
Since he wasn't going to be able to win the argument with her, and there was little point in contradicting a woman when she was being complimentary, he put a finger to his lips and said, "Shh, don't tell anyone." And then, with one last kiss to her hand, and a murmured, "Adieu," he made his way out the door and outside. Once on his horse and on his way back to his small townhouse across town, he allowed himself to assess the visit. It went well, he thought. Kate had seemed to understand the limits he had set upon their marriage, and she'd reacted to his lovemaking with a desire that was sweet and fierce at the same time. All in all, he thought with a satisfied smile, the future looked bright. His marriage would be a success. As for his previous concerns, well, it was clear he had nothing to worry about. Kate was worried. Anthony had been practically tripping over himself to make certain that she understood that he would never love her, and he certainly didn't seem to want her love in return. Then he'd gone and kissed her, as if there were no tomorrow, as if she were the most beautiful woman on earth. She'd be the first to admit that she had little experience with men and their desires, but he'd certainly seemed to desire her. Or was he simply wishing she was someone else? She was not his first choice for a wife. She'd do well to remember that fact. And even if she did fall in love with him, well, she'd simply have to keep it to herself. There was really nothing else to do. Chapter 16. It has come to this author's attention that the wedding of Lord Bridgerton and Miss Sheffield is to be a small, intimate, and private affair. In other words, this author is not invited. But have no fear, dear reader. This author is at her most resourceful at times such as these, and promises to uncover the details of the ceremony, both the interesting and the banal. The wedding of London's most eligible bachelor is surely something which must be reported in this author's humble column, don't you agree? Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 13th of May, 1814. The night before the wedding, Kate was sitting on her bed in her favourite dressing gown, looking dazedly at the multitude of trunks strewn across the floor. Her every belonging was packed away, neatly folded or stored, ready for transport to her new home. Even Newton had been prepared for the journey. He'd been bathed and dried, a new collar had been affixed to his neck, and his favourite toys were loaded into a small satchel that now sat in the front hall, right next to the delicately carved wooden chest Kate had had since she was a baby. The chest was filled with Kate's childhood toys and treasures, and she'd found tremendous comfort in their presence here in London. It was silly and sentimental, but to Kate, it made her upcoming transition a little less scary. Bringing her things, funny little items that meant nothing to anyone but her, to Anthony's home, made it seem more like it would truly be her home as well. Mary, who always seemed to understand what Kate needed before she understood it herself, had sent word to friends back in Somerset, as soon as Kate had become betrothed, asking them to ship the chest to London in time for the wedding. Kate stood and wandered about the room, stopping to run her fingers across a nightgown that was folded and laid upon a table, awaiting transfer to the last of her trunks. It was one that Lady Bridgerton, Violet, she had to start thinking of her as Violet, had picked out, modest in cut, but sheer in fabric. Kate had been mortified throughout the entire visit to the lingerie maker. This was her betrothed's mother, after all, selecting items for the wedding night. As Kate picked up the gown and set it carefully in a trunk, she heard a knock at the door. She called out her greeting, and Edwina poked her head in. She, too, was dressed for bed, her pale hair pulled back into a sloppy bun at the nape of her neck.
"I thought you might like some hot milk,"
Edwina said. Kate smiled gratefully.
"That sounds heavenly."
Edwina reached down and picked up the ceramic mug she'd set on the floor.
"Can't hold two mugs and twist the doorknob at the same time,"
she explained with a smile. Once inside, she kicked the door shut and handed one of the mugs to Kate. Eyes trained on Kate, Edwina asked without preamble,
"Are you scared?"
Kate took a gingerly sip, checking the temperature before gulping it down. It was hot, but not scalding, and it somehow comforted her. She'd been drinking hot milk since childhood, and the taste and feel of it always made her feel warm and secure.
"Not scared, precisely," she finally replied, sitting down on the edge of her bed. "But nervous, definitely nervous." "Well, of course you're nervous,"
Edwina said, her free hand waving animatedly through the air.
"Only an idiot wouldn't be nervous. Your whole life is going to change. Everything, even your name. You'll be a married woman, a Viscountess. After tomorrow, you will not be the same woman, Kate. And after tomorrow night..."
"That's enough, Edwina," Kate interrupted. "But you are not doing anything to ease my mind."
"Oh,"
Edwina offered her a sheepish smile.
"Sorry."
"It's all right," Kate assured her. Edwina managed to hold her tongue for about 4 seconds before she asked,
"Has Mother been in to speak with you?"
"Not yet."
"She must, don't you think? Tomorrow is your wedding day, and I'm sure there are all sorts of things one needs to know."
Edwina took a big gulp of her milk, leaving a rather incongruous white moustache on her upper lip, then perched on the edge of the bed across from Kate.
"I know there are all sorts of things I don't know. And unless you've been up to something I don't know about, I don't see how you could know them either."
Kate wondered if it would be impolite to muzzle her sister with some of the lingerie Lady Bridgerton had picked out. There seemed to be some rather nice poetic justice in such a manoeuvre.
"Kate?" Edwina asked, blinking curiously. "Kate? Why are you looking at me so strangely?"
Kate gazed at the lingerie longingly.
"You don't want to know." "Well, I..."
Edwina's mutterings were cut short by a soft knock at the door.
"That'll be Mother,"
Edwina said with a wicked grin.
"I can't wait."
Kate rolled her eyes at Edwina as she rose to open the door. Sure enough, Mary was standing in the hall, holding 2 steaming mugs.
"I thought you might like some hot milk," she said with a weak smile.
Kate lifted her mug in response.
"Edwina had the same notion. What is Edwina doing here?"
Mary asked, entering the room.
"Since when do I need a reason to talk with my sister?"
Edwina asked with a snort. Mary shot her a peevish look before turning her attention back to Kate.
She mused. "We do seem to have a surfeit of hot milk." "This one's gone lukewarm anyway,"
Kate said, setting her mug down on one of the already closed-up trunks and replacing it with the warmer one in Mary's hand.
"Edwina can take the other one down to the kitchen when she leaves."
"Beg pardon?"
Edwina asked, vaguely distracted.
"Oh, of course. I'm happy to help."
But she didn't rise to her feet. In fact, she didn't even twitch, save for the back and forth of her head, as she looked from Mary to Kate and back again.
"I need to speak with Kate,"
Mary said. Edwina nodded enthusiastically.
"Alone?"
Edwina blinked.
"I have to leave."
Mary nodded and held out the lukewarm mug.
"Now?"
Mary nodded again. Edwina looked stricken. Then her expression melted into a wary smile.
"You're joking, right? I may stay, right?"
"Wrong," Mary replied. Edwina turned pleading eyes to Kate.
"Don't look to me,"
Kate said, with a barely suppressed smile.
"It's her decision. She'll be doing the talking after all. I'll just be listening."
"And asking questions,"
Edwina pointed out.
"And I have questions too."
She turned to her mother.
"Lots of questions."
"I'm sure you do," Mary said, "and I'll be happy to answer them all the night before you get married."
Edwina groaned her way upright.
"This isn't fair,"
she grumbled, snatching the mug out of Mary's hand.
"Life isn't fair,"
Mary said with a grin.
"I'll say,"
Edwina muttered, dragging her feet as she crossed the room. "And no listening at the door," Mary called out.
"I wouldn't dream of it,"
Edwina drawled.
"Not that you'd talk loudly enough for me to hear a thing anyway."
Mary sighed as Edwina stepped out into the hall and shut the door, her movements punctuated by a constant stream of unintelligible grumbles.
"We shall have to whisper," she said to Kate.
Kate nodded, but she did feel enough loyalty toward her sister to say,
"She might not be eavesdropping."
The look Mary gave her was dubious in the extreme.
"Do you want to swing the door open to find out?"
Kate grinned despite herself.
"Point taken."
Mary sat down in the spot Edwina had just vacated and gave Kate a rather direct look.
"I'm sure you know why I'm here."
Kate nodded. Mary took a sip of her milk and was silent for a long moment before she said,
"When I married, for the first time, not to your father, I knew nothing of what to expect in the marriage bed. It was not..."
She closed her eyes briefly, and for a moment she looked to be in pain.
"My lack of knowledge made it all the more difficult," she finally said,
the slowness of her carefully chosen words telling Kate that difficult was probably a euphemism.
"I see,"
Kate murmured. Mary looked up sharply.
"No, you don't see, and I hope you never do. But that is beside the point. I always swore that no daughter of mine would enter into marriage ignorant of what occurs between a husband and wife."
"I'm already aware of the basics of the manoeuvre,"
Kate admitted. Clearly surprised, Mary asked,
"You are?"
Kate nodded.
"It can't be very much different from animals."
Mary shook her head. Her lips pursed into a slightly amused smile.
"No, it's not."
Kate pondered how best to phrase her next question. From what she'd seen on her neighbour's farm back in Somerset, the act of procreation didn't look terribly enjoyable at all. But when Anthony kissed her, she felt as if she were losing her mind. And when he kissed her twice, she wasn't even sure if she wanted it back. Her entire body tingled, and she suspected that if their recent encounters had occurred in more suitable locales, she would have let him have his way with her with nary a protest. But then there was that awful screaming mare at the farm. Frankly, the various pieces of the puzzle didn't seem to reconcile. Finally, after much clearing of her throat, she said,
"It doesn't look very pleasant."
Mary closed her eyes again, her face taking on that same look as before, as if she were remembering something she'd rather keep tucked away in the darkest recesses of her mind. When she opened her eyes again, she said,
"A woman's enjoyment depends entirely on her husband."
"And a man's?"
"The act of love,"
Mary said, blushing.
can and should be a pleasant experience for both man and woman. But,
she coughed and took a sip of her milk,
I would be remiss if I did not tell you that a woman does not always find pleasure in the act. But a man does.
Mary nodded.
That doesn't seem fair.
Mary's smile was wry.
I believe I just told Edwina that life wasn't always fair.
Kate frowned, staring down into her milk.
Well, this really doesn't seem fair. This doesn't mean,
Mary hastened to add,
that the experience is necessarily distasteful to the woman, and I'm certain it won't be distasteful to you. I assumed the Viscount has kissed you.
Kate nodded without looking up. When Mary spoke, Kate could hear the smile in her voice.
I'll assume from your blush, Mary said, that you enjoyed it.
Kate nodded again, her cheeks now burning.
If you enjoyed his kiss, Mary said, then I am certain you won't be upset by his further attentions. I'm sure that he will be gentle and attentive with you.
Gentle didn't quite capture the essence of Antony's kisses, but Kate didn't think that was the sort of thing one was meant to share with one's mother.
Truly, the entire conversation was embarrassing enough as it was. Men and women are very different,
Mary continued, as if that weren't completely obvious.
And a man, even one who is faithful to his wife, which I'm sure the Viscount will be to you, can find his pleasure with almost any woman.
This was disturbing, and not what Kate had wanted to hear.
And a woman, she had prompted. It is different for a woman. I have heard that wicked women find their pleasure, like a man, in the arms of any who will satisfy. But I do not believe it. I think that a woman must care for her husband in order to enjoy the marriage bed.
Kate was silent for a moment.